I don't know. I guess this somehow, some way, probably makes sense to somebody. But the corn market is trading on the plus side of unchanged as some of the driest areas of Iowa are picking up some rain. And good rain, if the radar can be trusted. We'll get more on this week's weather and talk environmental defense.
Live from beneath a fickle sky via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin the week with Machine Repeat, Greg Peterson, and then we'll talk with Scott Henry, CEO of Longview Farms. And right after the news, a weather update from Michael Clark from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Hey, Davis, how you doing this morning? Buddy. Everything looking good?
Well, yeah, you know, yesterday, so I got up early, ready to start the day on Sunday, and headed out for church, and this weird wet stuff just started falling out of the sky, and it turns out I'd completely forgotten about this, but there's a little knob in my Jeep, and you turn it, and there's these things that clear the water off of your windshield while you're driving. I had forgotten they were there.
Oh, right. Well, at least it still works. They didn't didn't dry rot on you?
No, not yet. I'm sure the dealership gouged me for them as a, you know, an extra accessory, an add-on, but gosh, I'm glad I had them. It was really coming down for a while. There was hail. It was nutty.
I love it. Whew. I love it. Yeah, you know what? And some of those showers that we got yesterday afternoon were kind of unexpected. They really weren't on the radar, and all of a sudden, here they pop up. We ended up with like 0.3 inches here in northeast Iowa, but you know, I guess that'll help the corn crop for. I mean, maybe we've used it up by now. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So we need a lot more, but as we look at the radar, some rains are pushing through some of those driest areas of west central Iowa. For the most part, the heaviest rains look to be staying north of I-80 right now, but boy, they roll right up to the Minnesota border and even get into southern Minnesota a little bit. So there's some rain falling in some areas that really needed it here this morning. So that's good news. We'll talk to Michael about that here in just a little bit.
Yeah, right, I've got some details, too, in the news coming up.
Excellent. Let's get to it.
Yeah. Well, rain over the weekend was most significant in the upper Midwest, kind of as you said, but also parts of Missouri, with a small area from central Nebraska to interior southeastern South Dakota also receiving around an inch of rain. That's according to World Weather Inc. They said, quote, net drying occurred in most other areas, with temperatures mostly seasonable in the Midwest, the Delta, and southern states, and a little warmer than usual in the plains. Over the next 2 weeks, widely varying amounts of rain are expected for most crop areas east of the Rocky Mountains, the Weather Watcher reports. And we'll get more from Michael Clark from BAM WX on this coming right up,
You bet. You bet.
President Donald Trump on Saturday signed 4 executive orders aimed at helping Americans cope with the economic fallout from the pandemic following the collapse in talks between Republicans and Democrats on Friday over a rescue package. The orders would defer payroll taxes for Americans earning less than $100,000 a year, implement a moratorium on evictions and give financial assistance to renters, add $400 per week in extra unemployment benefits through the end of 2020, and postpone student loan interest and payments through the end of the year. Both sides said Friday they'll only come back to the table when the other side has something new to offer.
Right.
Our president is dealing with children up there. It's crazy, Chip.
In many cases, that is exactly right, sir. I don't want to say entertaining. It's been frustrating to watch this whole process, and hopefully there will be something new that will come to the table that will get the two sides together and give the American people some hope that this Congress can actually get together and do something.
I'm taking the under, Chip. I'll take the under on that.
Right.
A challenge brought against the Trump administration's Clean Water Act rule redefining federal jurisdiction over the nation's waters from the Obama administration WOTUS rule was dismissed by a federal judge in Oregon. The Oregon Cattlemen's Association had sued the EPA and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in May for bringing non-navigable small streams and wetlands under Clean Water Act protection in the Navigable Waters Protection Rule. And did you say we're going to talk about this a little later on in the show?
Not today. We'll get to, we're going to have a conversation about the Environmental Defense Fund.
Very good.
Yeah, yeah.
Very good. Well, yep. China will impose sanctions on 11 U.S. citizens in response to similar measures from Washington on Chinese and Hong Kong officials as the two sides step up their dispute over Beijing's imposition of a new security law on the city. China's foreign ministry said it would impose the measures on Senators Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. Kenneth Roth, executive director of Human Rights Watch, and Michael Abramowitz, the president of U.S. government-funded organization Freedom House, were also on that list. However, no details on what form those sanctions might take. The tit-for-tat what China continues, Chip.
Yeah, and those 11 U.S. citizens, the lawmakers, for the most part, are going to be probably wearing those sanctions with a sense of pride.
Red badge of courage, eh, baby?
Red badge of courage. There it is.
Well, China will likely import around 8 million metric tons of soybeans per month in the fourth quarter of 2020, with the bulk of those soybeans coming from the U.S. That's according to four traders and crushers cited. Yeah. And Canada plans to impose a 10% retaliatory duty on selected U.S. aluminum products on September 16 in response to the Trump administration's decision to reinstate a Section 232 national security tariff on 10% of Canadian aluminum products on August 16. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. How you doing, Michael?
Good, Chip. Just watching this cluster of storms roll east right now. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's very impressive. That cluster that is just north of I-80 making its way, it's still west of Des Moines. It's been holding together pretty well, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think it really does. It continues to probably organize and strengthen as it approaches Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, and then, you know, eventually into north central Illinois. And everything's on the table. 70-mile-per-hour winds, 1-inch hail, vivid lightning, and heavy rain. Not a huge tornado threat, but it certainly, as it enters far east Iowa and north central Illinois, could really be at its peak this evening. Would definitely be aware this evening with that.
Okay. You know, it only makes sense that that dry area there in west central Iowa would get hit with some of the, you know, some severe weather as we're trying to fix some of the dry conditions, doesn't it?
Yeah, no kidding. Now, there are other chances throughout the next few days. We have an active northwest flow, I think. You know, as we talked about last week, I think we can see better chances this week for folks in Iowa, hopefully not to this extent. And then it gets cooler again next week and a little less active. So it's kind of this roller coaster of weather here coming up.
Okay. What about that eastern belt? Because if we're moving everything to the west a little bit, is that going to take away some of the potential for the eastern belt?
A little bit. Folks in you know, northeast Indiana, northwest Ohio, these people really need rain. It's been dry. And it doesn't look to be excessively wet. My concern is the Atlantic, the tropical Atlantic, is going to get very active again. And if that happens, that can also kind of steal moisture as well. So we'll have to be on the lookout. It's not a slam dunk yet.
Gotcha. All right, Michael, thank you so much. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Chip.
That's Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. Okay, when we come back, we're going to have a conversation with Machinery Pete. That's Greg Peterson. He opened up some info at machinerypete.com. We've got the details coming your way next. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Pioneer. For the best agronomic advice for your farm, count on your local Pioneer team for year-round advice. Pioneer, an American seed brand since 1926.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Corey. It's Monday. That means it's time for a conversation with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing well, Chip. How about you?
I'm doing just fine. And when I take a look at machinerypete.com, there's some big changes happening there. Tell us about it.
Yeah, big change last week. I was so excited about it, Chip. We've opened the doors on our auction price data. It's free for anybody, everyone to come in and hop in now. I've been compiling prices for over 30 years, and time was right. I've been hoping to do it for years, but we're very appreciative to all the good folks and how our business has grown over the years. And so now when you go to machinerypete.com, just click on the auction price link, folks. And what you'll be doing, you're hopping into everything that I'm looking at every day. So it's 726,000 sale prices on every conceivable make and model category of equipment. And we update this stuff every day throughout the day. So you can hop in, and our goal here is to just arm you with all this info. It's been a lifetime of work, of joy on my end, and we really hope that it can help save you money when you're buying, selling, trading, and then even maybe more so, Chip, just the pure fun of diving in here, whatever if you're trying to figure out what your 2-year-old combine is worth or your 1206 International, we got data that is just deep and good, and we want to put it right in your hands.
Excellent, excellent. So you said that the time is right to do this. Why is now the time right?
Well, the Internet's a funny thing. I mean, so we put our machinerypete.com website up March of 2000. And even then there was a little discussion like, well, information wants to be free. But, I was trying to run a business, raise two kids. So we always had a subscription model that dated back to 1989 when I started with a book. So that's how we were able to do all this. We had, and very thankful to all our loyal subscribers all these years. But as our business grew, then I partnered with Farm Journal in 2014. Of course, our TV show grew and all these other things we're doing. Now we have 115,000 pieces for sale on our website, work with great dealers across North America. So again, the business has grown, and the subscription element was becoming a minor piece. And all this last 6-7 years, I've thought, I want to get all this information in everyone's hands. Because again, for years, I don't want to say a frustrating, Chip, but I'd get a lot of outreach. People would say, hey, Pete, I just bought this, this baler, this tractor, this skid steer. How'd I do? And I love conversing with people. But it always made me think, man, I wish these folks would have had our info in their hands as they were doing their research.
Right.
And the way we all live now, we use the internet to research all our purchasing decisions. Mm-hmm. So, like I say, we're pushing 1 million data points here to, for you to chew on and take the guesswork out of anything. We don't want to guess about any decisions. Decisions are too important these days. Dollars are too precious.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. It's very interesting to me that you are doing this now in the same year that Pro Farmer, for the first time, is making the evening meetings of the Crop Tour available for free to everybody from anywhere. Now, for the Crop Tour, admittedly, it was kind of forced on us because we do enjoy those evening meetings that we had at those overnight locations where we were pulling in and stopping. And we're going to miss those. We're going to miss those meetings. Mm-hmm. But, Greg, if we can replace it with getting that information into more people's hands by using the internet and those evening virtual meetings, I'm all over it. I think it is so cool. It's like you said, it's part of leveling the playing field. Give them the information that they need right up front so that they can make the decisions that need to be made.
Yep, and what you're doing, Chip, that's just what we're trying to do. You're just leveraging those decades of hard work and connections that you built up for the Crop Tour. And just like I did with 1,100 auction companies I got to know over 30 years. And COVID, again, it's changing. There's going to be, it's a pain in the butt, of course, on so many levels. But there'll be some really good developments, I think, coming out of this. And more information flowing freely to people faster, that's a good thing.
Yeah, okay. But I will admit, that's a symptom that I hadn't heard
with COVID.
You know, Yeah, the pain in the butt. I hadn't heard that as a symptom of the coronavirus.
Oh, believe me, we filmed two auctions last week for our TV show. There were a lot of discussions about COVID at the auctions. I heard a lot of symptoms. We just hope everyone stays well out there. Yeah, stay well, folks. And, yeah, let's all – we'll get through it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, let's talk about what you got coming up this week. August 17th, you doing some work out east?
There is a market-setting sale we've got our eyes on, Chip. It's actually an online auction, so I won't be there, but our friends at AgPro, a fantastic John Deere dealer throughout the country, I think they have 90 stores now. But the Ohio arm of their business, they've got, I think, 20 locations. They're having an absolute dealer inventory reduction auction August 17th, and it's with our good friends at Sullivan Auctioneers, which brings into play two important points. One, it's an absolute auction. There's no games here. Everything sells, goes home to the highest bidder, everything. And then two, no buyer's premium, which, of course, Dan Sullivan and their crew there, they absorbed that fee when COVID came, you know, just like we're talking about making changes on the fly. They did that back in mid-March. So on this sale, Chip, on Monday, August 17th, there's over 40 combines. And in fact, I think there's eight John Deere S700 series. I think there's four S790s. There's 10 S680s. There's 11 S660s. And again, you know, as we move into the harvest season, if you're needing a good used combine, folks, some options here. And I'll tell you, my good friend Zach Heiner with Sullivan Auctioneers, Zach's about as sharp as they come. He sent me a note and he said, Pete, I was out there talking to Ted Miller, kind of the remarketing manager with AgPro. And Zach said, Pete, these combines are unbelievably clean. We got a podcast coming out this week with talking to Ted about them. So just a great buying opportunity. And the sale, it begins to close, I think, 10 a.m. Eastern on Monday the 17th. And we'll get all the prices and jam them right into Machinery Pete. So if you're wondering what everything brought, you know, we'll have it all in there for you.
Cool. Cool. Very cool. Another thing that you got coming up, the Farm Journal Field Days. You've got a Machinery Pete Pavilion, right?
Oh, it's going to be so much fun, Chip. So excited about this. Here again, changing on the fly, you know, we love the traditional farm show, but hey, we got to do things different and better. So Farm Journal Field Days, you're right. We have a Machinery Pete Pavilion, and we've got some exciting content lined up. I'll be doing some fun things, you know, talking about market updates from my end. On the 2 days, the 25th and 7th, I'll be doing kind of a lunchtime talk, sort of my top takeaways from 30 years. So that'll be fun. And then we've got some really fun conversations, I think, on a simulcast. You'll be able to listen to them, watch them whenever you want, folks, within the Machinery Pete Pavilion at Farm Journal Field Days. So really, it's been busy the last couple of weeks getting ready, but this is going to be something.
Yeah, you're going to load up a couple of those classic Machinery Pete stories of the personalities out there.
Well, yeah, it's a fun exercise, you know, taking 30 years and trying to go back and pull maybe my favorite four or five stories. Thing I'm working on is, you know, it's a tough time. I mean, our country, our culture, we're kind of divided. And one thing I want to do, and I know you're all over this too with things you're doing for Ronald McDonald House, Chip, try to pull forward some stories, some, you know, neighbors doing things for each other that make us smile and feel good about who we are and where we're going. So I just want to share some of those favorite stories. So we'll have that in the Machinery Pete Pavilion, and looking forward to presenting that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And what I'm doing to help with Ronald McDonald House is I'm going to participate again in the Iowa Governor's Charity Steer Show. I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to be working with Reeve Wagner out of Franklin County. That's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to doing that. Now, we need to get everybody in position so that they can get into the Machinery Pete Pavilion, take advantage of everything that's being offered at the Farm Journal Field Days. It is super simple and it's free, like the auction data at machinerypete.com. It's free to register for the Farm Journal Field Days. Not only is it free to register, the Farm Journal Field Days are free. and when you get signed up, you are also signing up for thousands of prizes. We've got a full-size side-by-side that is the grand prize, I guess, that's being given away. Just go to farmjournalfieldays.com, get signed up for the field days, get signed up for the crop tour meetings, and get signed up for that benefit concert. Greg, it was fun talking with you, buddy. Be safe this week. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds great, Chip. Take care.
All right. That is Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, right here on AgriTalk. We'll be back in a moment.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Pivot Bio Proven, predictable, productive, weatherproof. Get a reliable partner. Get the new nitrogen. Get Pivot Bio Proven.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Beach had some more export sales announcements this morning, huh?
Yeah, a couple sales to China and then to unknown destinations as well. And so, you know, that's given us a little bit of price support, bounced a little bit here in the soybean market. Meal is also helping out, and that's given us a little bit of an extra boost. But I think most of it's corrected buying, to be honest with you. We do have some decent rains rolling across parts of the Western Corn Belt, including much of the state of Iowa here this morning. Really rallying in the face of some generally favorable weather. And I think that you can just chalk that up to correction and the fact that we've been pressed hard to the downside here recently.
Right. And we've got the reports coming up on Wednesday, USDA's first survey-based crop estimates of the year for corn and soybeans. That might be encouraging a little bit of that short covering.
Yeah, I think so. And corn's higher as well, and that's the market where the funds have really gotten short. So I think that some of that's probably true. Now, the trade is anticipating that we will see above trend line yields for both corn and soybeans and big crop estimates. But a little bit of corrective buying ahead of the report is probably has something to do with it, definitely.
Gotcha. Let's go over to livestock. Live cattle and lean hogs pushing to the upside.
Yeah, the cattle market, probably not too surprising there in the fact that we did see farmer cash trade last week, and so you should see that market continue to strengthen there. On the hog, the big move to the upside today, technical breakout above the recent highs, it triggered some buy stops on the move up and really
gotcha.
An explosive move this morning.
Thanks, Beach. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize Sanderson Farms for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right. Yeah. Hey, good conversation there with Machinery Pete. He's bringing a lot of new information. I shouldn't say new information. It's information that before it was behind a paywall. Now it's out there where you get access to it right away. So it's a big change for machinerypete.com. No doubt about it. A lot of good information available there. Okay, man, let's get into this conversation right now with Scott Henry. Scott is a farmer there in central Iowa. He's the CEO of Longview Farms. Scott, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing well, Chip. How about yourself?
Doing just fine, just fine. Okay, let me set this up for everybody. So a couple of weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago tomorrow, we had Congressman Austin Scott from Georgia on the show. We were talking about how farmers might, how they might be asked to do more than their share of heavy lifting when it comes to some of the climate issues out there if they don't get engaged in the conversation right now. In that conversation, Congressman Scott made a mention of the EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund. Shortly after that, a listener rather strongly advised me that the congressman may have misrepresented the intent and the goals of the EDF. He suggested that we talk with a member of the EDF Farmer Advisory Board to get a better idea what the EDF is, what it represents, what the goals are. And that is what we are doing right now because Scott Henry is a member of the Farmer Advisory Board for EDF, right?
I am. Yep. Have been
Very
for
cool.
several years, in fact. Yep.
Very cool. Okay. So I want to start with something that I think is kind of, it might have people scratching their head right now because EDF, Environmental Defense Fund, it's a name, a title, a label, whatever you want to call it, that it almost immediately puts some farmers on the defense against EDF, doesn't it?
Yes, and it's an unfortunate name in that regard, but I think the biggest thing that the agriculture community can look at that and needs to understand is that EDF is a different kind of environmental group. And just as it relates to how I'm talking to you today, you know, for over 10 years now, they've had a group of farmers actually advise them and act as a sounding board as well for some of their different initiatives and programs that they're looking to roll out. And so I guess that's kind of the goal of a lot of my message today is just to let the agriculture community know that maybe not jump so fast to conclusions, even with a name like Environmental Defense Fund.
Yeah, so as I started looking into it, Scott, I know more members of the Farmer Advisory Board than I thought I would. How many are on the board, and what kind of geography does it represent?
Yeah, there's roughly 20 farms represented on the board, and it covers the country literally from the far west, even up into the Pacific Northwest, down to Texas and over on the eastern side of the country as well. And it would be a real smattering of both livestock and row crop producers, as well as different generations involved. Some even have a father-son combo, both being represented on the board itself.
Cool. So why did EDF form this board?
Yeah, so, you know, like many large organizations, you know, there's different kind of slivers and different groups within them. And when the Environmental Defense Fund was looking at their work in the agriculture space and I believe they call it their working lands, you know, I think they realized that the only way that you can actually get things done is to actually sit at the table with the farmer. You know, that the work has to be done by somebody, and we are the people that that will implement it, and it takes our willingness to try things and to adopt new practices, and to do so without taking into account the farmer's input would be misguided. And so I believe they formed this group to really do just that, to provide advice and to be that sounding board when they're looking at things that their members are passionate about and how they can collaborate and do so in a way that isn't kind of an antagonistic relationship, but actually a very, very cohesive and very positive one.
Cool. How active is the board, Scott?
Yeah, very active. In fact, not only just from a in-person meeting, you know, once or twice a year, but also when, you know, depending on the different programs that EDF is looking at rolling out, I'll use our farm, for example. We have been a subject to several of their different conservation kind of research efforts and saying, okay, mm-hmm. let's look at production agriculture and how conservation practices can pay or where they maybe don't pay as well and what that looks like in a real live farm. And so when they do that, they'll actually come to their advisory board to be some of the different subjects to those, or the case studies is probably a better word to use.
Yeah.
And that's a fairly involved process, one that we've done, I think, two different studies now over the last 3 years with them.
So you're not just it's not just advisory, you're actively engaged in the research that they're doing.
Very much so. And if you think about the different partnerships that they're forming, you know, whether it be with the national corn growers or even maybe more on a more regional level, for example, their most recent report with the Iowa Soybean Association focused on the financial analysis of how conservation practices impact the bottom line. It's one that, you know, it takes up more time than some of us maybe realize getting into it, but it's been, uh-huh. been well worth it.
I was, before I get to the rewards that you might be getting out of it, I gotta, What do they ask of you, and how well do they prepare you for meetings? I mean, I've seen some of these advisory boards in the past, Scott, where it's like, yep, come to our meeting. We're going to meet down in Orlando, bring the kids. You show up at the meeting, and for the first time, you're seeing the information on the board. I don't know if you can be an advisor in a role like that, but how well do they prep you?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's the way they've structured it has changed slightly over the past. You know, a lot of times they would try and tie a meeting on to some sort of commodity trade show or event. Mm-hmm. And while that's an easy way to get farmers to maybe all get in the same room, I think they realized that, you know, having even a separate meeting that's fully devoted to focusing on just exactly what they're wanting us to review or provide input on has been very beneficial with that, you know, especially when it comes to things like the congressman was bringing up, whether it be a farm bill or other policy related mm-hmm. matter. There's been meetings in DC as well as out in the countryside. From a prep standpoint, you know, a lot of it is truly sharing with us some of the working documents that they're looking at doing. If you look back kind of on the history wow. of the relationship, you know, when they were kind of doing some of the science and evaluating the procedures for whether it was their stance on biotechnology or how they were looking at specific practices and kind of the feasibility of them in a commercial farming type application, you know, you're given those to review ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So are you satisfied with what EDF does with the information that the farmer advisors provide to them?
I am. I feel very confident that it's kept safe in this world of data and data privacy. I think that's always kind of an initial concern. But I think what gets me more excited or more passionate about it is the fact that they actually use the data and follow what it says. You know, I think the Environmental Defense Fund representatives would tell you that they're trying to make sure that both the science-based reality and the economic reality, when put together, can create a positive environmental outcome. And if they can't, then they know that it won't be adopted or that it won't be implemented. And so to the extent that they can get real-life case studies and real-life data from farmers like ourselves, it allows them to not come to market with something that maybe would scare farmers away, but come to the market with an opportunity or an idea or a program that they've tested on real life farms, that they've not only looked at the science, but the economic factors contributing to it. And it's been vetted by farmers that I think provide a very good kind of spectrum or broad-based reality of those that would be looking at the program to be a participant.
Okay. All right, Scott, you just got on the elevator with a skeptical Midwest farmer. There's one thing that they need to know about the EDF. What is it?
Yeah, I would tell them that EDF is looking at making sure that if they're going to bring a practice that will positively impact the environment, is going to be one that can be implemented on their farm that's based not only in just science, but also the economic realities that we're all living in today.
That's cool. You've given me some encouragement to learn a little bit more about this, because I'll be honest, Scott, EDF, I knew that it was out there. I knew that there was a connection to some farmers, but this gives me a lot of encouragement to learn more about them and figure it out. And obviously you've provided a lot. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, Chip.
Register now for your chance to win one of more than 1,000 prizes, including a full-size side-by-side utility vehicle. Go to farmjournalfielddays.com for full contest details. AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Yeah, those rains are holding together out there in the western Iowa, Davis. They're making their way into central Iowa, knocking on the western door of Des Moines right now, and actually building a little bit south of I-80. So,
okay,
holding together all right. And we do have some storms that have just popped up here within the last hour since the show started. They'd be east of Mason City. Looks like Pam Johnson is probably getting a shower up there in Floyd County. So that's good news. Good news. Things are staying active. I hope nobody's getting blown over, but I sure don't want to shut the moisture off right now. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Hey, when Brian Grady and I were talking, he said that there were some new sales announced this morning. I'll give you the details on it. Export sales of 111,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to unknown destinations in the 2020-21 marketing year. Export sales of 324,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to China during the 2020-21 marketing year. And export sales of 264,000 metric tons of soybeans received in the reporting period for delivery to China during the 2020-21 marketing year. Now, what that means, that received in the reporting period, see, USDA has to report any single export sale of 100,000 metric tons or more. Okay, or I should say exporters have to report those sales to USDA, and then USDA makes it available to us. When you see, and we've been seeing this this message in some of the sales received in the reporting period. So in other words, what we've got going on now is a single exporter has made a series of smaller sales that during the reporting period, the previous 48 hours, it has added up to 264,000 metric tons.
Okay.
So not one single sale above 100,000, but when you put them all together, they get above 100,000, and that's when they have to be reported then, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing more and more of that. I don't know exactly what that means if we've got smaller crushers in China that have decided that they're getting in here and starting to take containerized shipments or something like that. I don't know. I don't know exactly what it means, but it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and okay, so that leads me to a story we mentioned in the news this morning.
Okay.
And I'm pulling this from Pro Farmer's First Thing today, just so I've got some of the details straight. Talking about China's poultry sector, helping to work through, helping to kind of close that protein gap.
Yeah.
After African swine fever. Talking about soybean demand here, Reuters says China will likely buy around 24 million metric tons of beans in the fourth quarter. A lot of that from the U.S., 8 million metric tons of soybeans per month. Through the fourth quarter, and that's according to traders and crushers cited by Reuters. So does that mean that Brazil's pipeline is running low? I mean, they've been fairly aggressive exporters over the past couple of months.
Yeah, I don't think
sounds
there's
like good
any
news
question.
For us.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, but that's seasonal. You know, that is seasonal. We go through that. I won't say every year because we've had some disappointments here, obviously, with our export tallies going into China. But it's a function of Brazil, Argentina gets half the year, the U.S. gets half of the year. Well, our half of the year starts, for the most part, at the last month or 6 weeks of the old crop marketing year, and we're into that right now, and extends then through the availability of the new crop supplies coming out of the U.S. right up until those new crop supplies are available out of South America again. Now, they will turn very quickly back to the South American supplies when they get their opportunity.
That was my next question. No way to judge this, but do you have a sense? Have you talked to Cordonier or anybody? Are they going to be selling off the combine down in South America? I mean, the Real has been kind of wacky.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as I know, they are going to be moving product as quickly as they can, but they're basically out. they do their best not to store. Okay. They don't want to be storing their bean crop, and there are some that will do it, but no, they move that product to the market almost as quickly as they can and make sure that they don't have any of the risk to the physical crop itself,
right.
You know, that it goes out of condition. There's enough risk to the physical crop when they put it on a truck and start driving it down some of the roads that they've got to travel.
True. So help me get my head around when do combines typically roll down there in South America? Is it, I'm feeling like February-ish, March-ish?
Yes. Yeah.
Is that right?
The earliest planted beans, they should be and normally are ready the very last of January, and we will start to see some of those new crop beans become available by mid-February. But it's typically in such a small quantity that, oh, look at that, it's coming. Brazil sold a boatload of beans to China, but it's one boatload. Okay. You know, it's 65,000 metric tons. And then it continuously builds. Continuously builds after that, so... Okay. Yeah. Okay. But we're into that time of the year where if a country needs soybeans, if a country needs bean products, they should be coming to the U.S. for them. That's the bottom line. That is the bottom line. And you know, we didn't even talk about China's commitments under the phase one there. But it could be that they will look to restock some of their state-owned reserves with U.S. soybeans during this period leading up to the end of December, because it's a calendar year accounting on that.
Okay.
So,
yeah. And maybe corn,
too. There could be some of that in there, too. Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely
on corn.
They sold
a ton of those reserves. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, you know what? This is another good topic for this afternoon when we have a conversation with Phil Conrad from Traders LLC. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Come back this afternoon and tomorrow morning. We'll get you up to speed and ready for the crop tour.